Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, this is Glenn Drover, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
You're listening to the Talking Metal Podcast with your host, Mark Striegel, and special guest co-host, Victor M. Ruiz. iTunes number one hard rock and metal podcast. I'm Bud Friendly. Now, here are your hosts, Mark and Victor.
Welcome, one and all, to another episode of Talking Metal Live. I'm Victor over here in Spain, and across the way, we have Mark Striegel in Maplewood, New Jersey.
Yo, Victor, how are you, man?
Doing good. How are you doing, Mark?
Good, good. Last Friday, I actually recorded a what would have been a Talking Metal Live if I was going out live over the stream, which I wasn't. But I recorded a podcast at the same exact time last Friday. It was episode 445, and had some good interviews, and it was a lot of fun. But I got to learn how to do this live streaming from my end here. Because right. I think it's really important that we keep this live show going consistently every Friday. And I spoke with John, and he wants to get involved. And it'd be great to even hear you and John do an episode together. And you know, one time when you're not available, John and I will do it. Maybe I do a solo episode. And I think between the three of us, there's absolutely no reason why we can't have something going on here live every Friday.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it would be great to keep things going, keep people interested, and you know, hearing one of us three or you know, two of us talking about just different things, whether they're guests on or not. It's really a lot of fun to do these shows when I do them with you. When I've had John on once in the past was pretty cool as well. So, and I think people get a kick out of listening to us just BS back and forth.
Yeah, totally. So why don't you tell us who's on the show tonight?
So today we have Glenn Drover, most known for his work in Megadeth. He played on a few of the latter. He only played on one of the Megadeth albums, now that I think of it. It's Chris Broderick that's done the majority of this stuff after the band got back together, because the system has failed. It was just Dave Mustaine, and then the following album, United Abominations, is the one with Glenn Drover. If I remember correctly, and that to me is my favorite out of all of the bunch that have been released since the band has gotten back together. I think it's really solid.
Yeah.
Top to bottom.
The Metal Sucks today called what's the new Megadeth? It's it's slipping my mind right now. The name of the new Megadeth album is Super Collider, right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Called it the worst record of 2013.
I don't know. I know,
that's why I'm telling you, because I know you like it, right?
I like the title track. There are a few tracks off of it that are cool. Is it the best work that they've done? No, not by a long shot, but it isn't Risk. I don't know. I'd put it somewhere in there with like Cryptic Writing or something like that. Okay. But I mean, it's not Peace Sells, it's not Rust in Peace, it's not United Abominations. But it's got some cool stuff on there. And come on, out of everything that's been released this year, you know, I know the guys at Metal Sucks love to, you know, poo-poo Megadeth and Metallica and certain bands. So anytime, you know, something comes up, I know that they compared it to Lulu, for example, and I don't think it's as bad as Lulu. So
weird. I've been listening to a little Lulu lately since Lou Reed died, and I know I'm the only one, but I actually, in a weird way, kind of like it. I mean, it's not something you can listen to every single day, but there's some kind of interesting stuff on there, and I like how raw it is. And I know I'm in a very lonely club saying that, but there's parts of Lulu that since Lou Reed's death I've discovered and enjoy a little bit, at least. So, hey, so let's, I know we got Glenn calling in at what, 9:15?
Yep.
Cool. Donnie G is emailing me too. He wants to call in. So maybe we'll give him a number to call in, but I don't want to give him the number right now or he's going to call in and then Glenn Grover is going to get a busy signal. So anyways, let's get in. Do you got the Hades track queued up?
Yes, sir. It is queued up.
Cool. So in episode 445, I said that this track was recorded in 1986, which Dan Lorenzo listened to the podcast and, of course, immediately told me it was recorded in 1984, which actually makes more sense in a weird way. It almost sounds more 1984 than 1986. It has this rawness. I think it's great. This is what Dan has to say about the track. The New Jersey band Hades have been... The New Jersey band Hades have released an early recording of the song The Cross with John Colura on vocals from 1984. The Cross was eventually recorded in 1986 with the new Hades lineup and released on the band's first album, Resisting Success, in 1987. So again, the version we're going to hear right now is from 1984, and Dan goes on to say, John Colura was in a Judas Priest tribute band that used to play in the Bergen County area. He had a ridiculous set of pipes and was the Hades vocalist for a short period of time. The Cross was originally written by myself and the original Hades vocalist, Paul Smith. Wow, this is getting confusing. But we never recorded it with Paul, and John changed the lyrics and melodies. This was John's only recording with Hades. He was actually supposed to re-record Paul's vocals for our song called Easy Way Out that ended up on Metal Blade's Metal Massacre 6. But John never showed up for that session, and that stunt pretty much ended his career in Hades, said founding member Dan Lorenzo. I bump into John every now and then, and it was a lifelong regret. John would try and talk me into writing together in the mid-90s, but I wasn't into it. Sadly, John passed away a few years ago. He reminds me of that great line in the Bronx Tale about wasted talent. The saddest thing in life is wasted talent, and the choices that you make will shape your life forever. John recorded a bunch of demos with a bunch of bands. I know how much he loved this recording. An old fan from Pittsburgh just sent this to me. This, of course, is Dan Lorenzo talking. So I thought I'd share it. I know John is somewhere on the other side smiling right now, said Dan Lorenzo. So let's check this out once again. I know you guys already heard it in the last podcast, but I personally think it sounds great and wanted to play it again, making sure that everybody knew it was 1984, not 1986. And when we come back, we may have Glenn on the line, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So here we go, a little Hades with The Cross.
Thank you.
We are back, and on the phone we have Glenn Drover. Glenn, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Not too bad. We have on to talk about an album that was recently released, where he's playing with Dave Martone, called Live at Metalworks, and this came out back in late September, right?
Yep. Sometime in September it was released. That's right.
Okay, and this was released in CD and DVD at the same time. Can you tell us a little bit about how this project sort of came about?
I believe initially it was an idea that, I'm not 100% clear on exactly how it started, but basically it was kind of a thing between ideas between me and the record company and some people at the Metalworks, where we did the webcast at the time, and it just evolved into this thing, you know. It started off with, you know, me doing it, and then they were like, well, what if we got another one of our artists on the label? This is Magna Carta, and they brought up the Dave Martone idea. And so basically what happened was both my band and his band, excuse me, played that day, and it was filmed in an auditorium for a live audience. You know, there is an audience there. It's not just a, you know, it's a live show, but it was a live webcast, and that's what happened on the day. That was the event. What ended up happening, you know, now this is 2 years ago, so I mean it's a little late coming out, to say the least. I'm not sure what the big delay was, but sorry. They ended up putting it out, so better late than never. The strange thing is that it's both of us on the same CD, which I don't think is... I didn't really like the idea from the get-go, because there might be some people that would like his style of music and not mine, and could be vice versa. We both play guitar, and we both play instrumental music, guitar-driven music, but it's quite a bit different. But anyway, they just packaged it together. It was like, I think their mindset was like, this is, you know, this is the day we did this event, and these were the artists that played, and here's the package. Anyway, but that's it. It came out like that, and it's a DVD, live DVD, and it also has a CD in there of the show as well. Initially, it was supposed to be just a DVD, but I had this idea to possibly do, like I was saying, you know, why don't I do a mix of it so we can, you know, it can be more for like audio for like iTunes or whatever. And in the end, they ended up just, you know, marketing it, I believe, as more of a CD with a bonus DVD. But whatever the case, it's a live show. There you have it.
And who is playing with you in the live setting on this DVD CD?
Well, the drummer that we had at the time, he's no longer with us. But the bass player, his name is Paul Yee. And the keyboard player is Jim Gilmore, who's keyboard player from the band Saga. He's still currently a member of that band.
Oh,
and
cool.
We started working together, about 3 years ago now. So, but that's the lineup, yeah.
Excellent. So you obviously have this band together. Are you guys working on new material right now, or what's up
we've been slowly working on stuff just kind of at our own pace, in around other things that we're doing, and we're about halfway through a new album. This one could possibly have half an album of instrumental tracks and half of it with guest vocals, so there's going to be probably guest players, guest singers. That's the way I'm looking at it right now, but it could change. I don't know. Basically, I'm just at this stage where, you know, we're recording stuff and putting things together, but how it's going to be formatted in the end, I don't know. We'll see. But things are running really well, and I'm really excited about what we're doing so far. So it's probably going to be even a little bit more diverse than the last one, where there's going to be more metal this time, and not just the rock fusion prog kind of thing, which of course is still going to be there. There's going to be those elements and those kind of songs, but there's also going to be some more heavier stuff as well.
Cool. And when you're talking about having vocals on half the album, have you already recorded and tracked vocals with some vocalists, or are you still kind of in the process of reaching out to people?
Well, there's a couple of people. I'm not going to, instead of saying anything right now and jinx the whole thing, I'm going to leave that. I'll wait for that. But what we've done so far, vocal-wise, is we did a cover of a Saga tune, something me and Jim had been talking about doing, and there was one tune in particular I thought would fit in with what we're doing, do it our own way. You know, it's still, you know, we're still keeping true to the original, but it's, you know, it's a little bit more aggressive and a little bit more us, this lineup. And that has the original singer, Mike Sadler, who he sang on the track. So that's really cool. So it's basically the band plus, you know, the singer as well from Saga, as well as the keyboard player, Jim. So we have that, which turned out really, really good. Really happy with that. And then there's also an old Eidolon track that was on an album that was never really quite released properly. It was one of the independent ones before we got signed to Metal Blade. And the singer from Metallium sang that track, Penny Bossy, who was a singer I wanted to work with for a long time. Love his vocals. And we just hooked up and talked about the possibility of doing a track, and then we did.
So excellent.
That's what I have so far. There's other things going on, but those are the two things I'm comfortable mentioning right.
Yeah, since you mentioned that the last track is a remake of a band that you actually... that you obviously had with your brother. Is there any chance that your brother would appear anywhere on this album?
No. No, he won't be on the album. So,
okay.
I mean, you know, the song that we recorded, I think for the most part, is Sean's song, if I can remember correctly. I think he wrote it. So there are some of his riffs and stuff on the album, yes. And there's a couple little bits and pieces here and there that are Sean, but... as far as him playing on the album, no, he won't be playing on the album this time.
Okay. Do you have another drummer lined up to play on the album then?
We do. We have. There's a drummer that young guy that we've been working with, and so far so good. He's a really good drummer, and but like I said, it's kind of a slow moving process right now. Really, I'm not really. We're not playing anywhere, and the recording stuff is we're just kind of taking our time with it. Just like we did with the Metalusion album, you know. So, but everything is going really, really good. Everybody's working out, and things are coming together. So, really happy about that.
Cool. And where's the best place people can get in touch with you online?
Well, I guess probably the Twitter page, you know, because you can always send little things here and there. I don't use the Facebook thing anymore. For me, that site's trouble and too much negativity. So yeah. I get rid of that quite some time ago. But I use Twitter because I think it's a lot more positive and seems to be a lot cooler. And for what I'm doing, Twitter makes more sense than anything, really.
Cool. And are you still doing lessons? I know last time I spoke with you, you were mm-hmm. doing a lot of guitar lessons. I think via like Skype, right?
Right. It's lessons, but it's also I also do a lot of interactive recording too with a lot of my guys. I do that. It's really kind of morphed into that, but a guitar lesson thingy. But it's we're using you know the tools of recording, not only doing that thing and getting into you know building songs or solo sections, you know learning how to construct solos over patterns and so forth. You know we're learning a lot of our guitar skills through that, but also you know at the same time doing this passing back and forth of files and building tunes and stuff like that. So it's a lot more fun. It's a lot more exciting. You know, sometimes you know, here's this lick, you know, and go practice that. And it's all cool doing all that stuff, but I find this a lot more productive because you're learning so many different things at one time and not just guitar. You're learning all that, but you're learning through, just like when I was playing, you know, growing up, playing along with records, you know, it was a lot of fun, and that's how I learned how to play initially, you know, is through playing with my albums and stuff and jamming over it and, you know, and all that stuff. So using the aid of music to, you know, rather than just playing stuff on your own, you're using these other kind of things to improve and learn a lot of new skills and stuff, not just guitar, but recording as well.
Excellent. And so if somebody wanted to contact you about, you know, lessons and just interacting with you online, the Twitter page, again, is the best place to do that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I could be contacted through there, but, you know, the best way is my main email address, which is G, D as in David, S in Sam, Rover, 767 at gmail.com.
Excellent. Cool.
So GDS Drover, 767 at gmail.
Excellent. And Glenn, where are you based out of?
I'm actually close to Windsor in Canada.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, real close to Detroit.
And is that where you're originally from, that area?
No, I actually grew up in a small town out of Montreal until I was in my mid-teens, and then I moved to a town outside of Toronto, where I lived up until about 4 or 5 months ago. And I've relocated, and I'm super happy. It's a lot better than where I used to live, that's for sure. Even though, cool. I mean, it was a cool area, and it's just too overpopulated, you know?
Yeah.
That's a whole other story, but yeah, I'm definitely really digging and very happy where I've moved. Very, very happy. So.
Fourth biggest city, I think, in North America, right? Toronto.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, I mean, if you want to, you know, be in that environment, you gotta love you. And for me, I'm so over that, being in the rat race for 30 years. You know, and my family, just not just me, but all of us, were just burnt out of that crap. So it was time to leave, and there you have it.
Excellent. Well, Glenn, thanks so much for touching base with us on Talking Metal. We really appreciate you coming on and updating us on what you're up to.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Glenn. You got some music there, Victor?
Yeah, we got some of... we got a track off of the Live at Metalworks. This is called Ascension, and this is just him, the album, as he mentioned, has another player on it, and they swap playing back and forth on certain tracks, but this is the one track that you can't find anywhere else on his other live album that he released or anything, so let's get into this. This is, once again, Ascension off of Live at Metalworks.
come out of this, I'm going to quickly just run down something. Then we'll talk about Jake for like 3 or 4 minutes. It doesn't have to be an in-depth discussion.
All right. We're actually back now. So one of the things that we had talked about off air that we were going to talk about and Mark just mentioned is the return of Jakey Lee.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk about that in just a second. I also want to mention to the handful of people that are listening live, I don't know why our voices are so low and the music is so loud. We'll try and work on that and get that corrected in future episodes. It's just the way it is tonight. So if you're listening to the podcast version, it most likely probably sounds fine because we go back and remix them and kind of re-put them together for the podcast. Real quick, before we talk about Jakey Lee and before we talk to Donnie G, we're going to try to call Donnie G, one of the handful of listeners listening tonight out in San Francisco. Good guy, was let go from Revolver Magazine a few months back. His name is Josh Bernstein, and he was always a big supporter of Talking Metal, and I was sorry to see him go. Revolver is my favorite magazine, and I think it's a big loss without him, and I just got the new issue of Revolver, and the cover is freaking terrible, and I couldn't help but think that Josh wouldn't have allowed this to happen. They actually have a blurry black and white photo of Black Sabbath on the cover of Revolver. Can you see that, Victor? I'm holding it up to the webcam. I don't know. It's very strange. And they also have their top 20 list, the top 20 albums of 2013. Again, my friend Josh not involved in picking this list this year. Let's quickly just hit upon a couple of these. I'm not going to hit everyone. If you're interested in knowing the complete top 20 of 2013 list, go buy the new issue of Revolver Magazine. Black Sabbath is on the cover. Number 20, they have Gore Guts. Number 19, an album that I like a lot, the new Rob Zombie, the Venomous Wrath Regeneration Vendor. Good record. Number 15, we're skipping around here, Five Finger Death Punch, The Wrong Side of Heaven, and The Right Side of Hell. Let's go on up. Number 13, an album which I've only heard people complain about, so I'm not sure why Revolver likes it so much, but 13 is Korn, the new Korn record. Number 12, Volbeat, Outlaw, Gentlemen, and Shady Ladies. Number 9, they have Alice in Chains with The Devil Put Dinosaurs Here, another record that people didn't seem to gravitate towards quite as much as Black Gives Way to Blue from a few years earlier. Number 7, Ghost BC, one of my favorite records of the year, if not my favorite record of the year. Infestissimum, I think it's pronounced, I don't know, who knows. Number 5, they have Abandon All Life. Actually, going back, number 6, Carcass Surgical Steel. A lot of people are loving that record. And number 2, a really interesting record. I don't know if you've heard this record, Victor. Death Heaven Sun is the band, and Sunbather is the album. Have you heard that?
I have not.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. It's almost like My Bloody Valentine, like that lush, like kind of like indie, like 90s, like early 90s, you know, rock, like just heroin, lush rock mixed with like black metal. It's like really weird. It sounds like a weird combination, but if you listen to it, it's way out there. It's like, as a guy in his 40s, it's something that I can't listen to over and over again. But when I do listen to it, it's somewhat impressive. And number one, according to Revolver, the number one album of the year is Black Sabbath 13.
Interesting.
Yeah, and
a lot of people are picking that album. It leads me to something I've been thinking about recently. With a lot of these albums, and I mean with a lot of these lists, there's so much music that, for example, is thrown at me, thrown at you, and all these people that are reviewing these albums. If these lists come out, say, a year from now, do you think... I know you really like that Ghost album, but some of these other albums, do you think that you would still like them as much as you do today?
Oh, I don't know. I get sick of stuff so easy, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, would I like them as much as I do today? Maybe not. You know, I mean, music, it's like, you know, it's like I've been listening to Rage for Order just nonstop for like the last week. It's like, you know, and that's an album I loved in the 80s when it came out. And, you know, I've had, you know, gravitated back to it here and there, but I haven't listened to that record in years, you know, and here I am listening to it again. And I love it just as much as ever, you know, but it's hard to say. There are other records that I go back to and I'm like, yeah, man, I just can't get into this anymore. Some of these albums age with you, others don't.
Right.
I personally think, you know, my top five today for 2013, it's like Sabbath is in there, but so is, I mean, Ghost BC is definitely number one for me this year. I like the new Queensryche a lot. You know, I do think it's a really great record. And in a weird way, it's almost made me appreciate Jeff Tate's voice more. No disrespect towards Todd, but it's reminded me that new Queensryche record, how great Queensryche once was, and has made me go back to their 80s era stuff and really intensely dive into it. And I mean, Jeff Tate at his prime, you just couldn't touch that voice. You know, I mean, it's something very unique about his voice. But I think Todd is doing a great job with Queensryche, and I think that album is really solid. I think this Def Haven record's interesting. I don't know if I would put it in my top five, personally, for what I enjoy listening to. What other ones am I really digging? Winery Dogs. I freaking love that record, Winery Dogs. You know, so you know, we'll talk more about that. I'm probably, for the first time in many years, going to do like my top 10 albums of the year this year, and I'll post that on Talking Metal soon. You should do a list too, Victor.
Yeah, I have to. I have a whole list of albums that I need to listen to before putting any sort of list together, because out of the ones that you mentioned, I mean, I've listened to the Sabbath one a lot. I've listened to the Alice in Chains a lot. I actually like that album. It's completely different to Black Gives Way to Blue, which I actually appreciate that they didn't do a similar album. There are some tracks off of that are just absolutely fantastic.
I got to go back and listen to it again, because my friend Matt Volpe, good friend of mine, he's not even really a metal guy, but he likes a lot of alternative and stuff, and he was just telling me what a great record that is. So I need to revisit it, because I definitely listened to it a couple times when it came out. But hey, you know, we got to call my good buddy Donnie G. I haven't spoken to him in years, and I also want to try to wrap up right at 10 o'clock tonight, because I'm leaving on a vacation first thing tomorrow morning. So did you get the number? I forwarded it to you. Let's see if we can get this maniac on the line. This guy is a long-time Talking Metal listener, and he's recently been calling into the Two Sides of the Coin podcast with Mitch LaFon, which a lot of people are listening to that show, man. I'm a little jealous. I was like, they're getting, like, on their YouTube page alone, they're getting, like, 5,000 views. And I shouldn't talk, because I know anybody listening to the live stream thinks that our audio sucks tonight. However, if you're listening to the podcast version, it probably sounds okay. But their audio on that show is pretty rough.
Yeah, it's touch and go. Definitely.
Not that that matters. So I think it probably comes down to content. And people are digging it. But you got them on the line?
Let me see. It gave me a call failed here. Again.
We'll check it out. Big thanks to Glenn Drover, former Megadeth guitarist, joining us here on the podcast tonight. And, oh, I hear it ringing. Will we get this maniac on the line or not?
Hey!
Donnie, it's Mark Striegel. How are you, man?
I know it is. What's up, buddy? How you doing, bro?
Good, man. Good. We haven't spoken in a while. How you been hanging?
You and me haven't spoken in a long time, and I go way back to the very beginnings of the I am the part of the inner sanctum of the Talking Metal podcast. I'm doing wonderful. And Victor, my European ancestral brother, how are you?
Good. How are you, Donnie?
I'm doing good, brother. I'm doing good. Marky Mark, man, thank you so much for calling me. I appreciate it so much. I miss talking to you. I just got back into the Talking Metal fold, as it were. And
so how long,
yeah, things
how
are...
long did you leave us for? There a few years we didn't.
Well, yeah, no, it was a while, and there's other things that I don't want. I went through a little bit of a situation, and but the fact of the matter is, I'm back, and I love you. You know me. I mean, I sent you the hearing aid, a copy of Kerrang to your Rockefeller Center. Where you work.
I'm the real deal, right? Yeah, oh yeah, definitely, man,
definitely.
Are you still working at, where were you working, Volkswagen or something?
Yeah, Volkswagen of Oakland, yeah. And I've been working there ever since that story I told you where I stole the Tommy Lee's Grammy invitation when I was driving around as a little kid in 89 is when Dr. Phil Good came out, and which, personally, Motley Crue died after Shout Out the Devil, because I'm a metal guy, but anyway, so I stole that. But if you don't mind, can I name Adam and Mark? You know, you've seen copies of my ticket stubs. I'd like to tell you my top 10 concerts of all time in my life.
Let's do it. You got that list ready to go right now?
I got it written up, bro.
Let's do it.
Before I say my list, The love that you gave Race for Order, and then the Rock Strikes 10 thing that I just discovered because of you. Oh my God, I just lit up because I saw that tour in August of 1986 at the Cow Palace, Rage for Order tour, open up for AC/DC, Who Made Who. But that being said, and then before I go any further, your Ghost, and in America, because we're sellouts here, it's Ghost BC, but oh my God, phenomenal. Phenomenal band. I flew to Vegas and saw them. They're awesome. They open up for Avenged Sevenfold, which is but Deftones, which I love. But it was my top 10 concerts of all time.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Kiss, Motley Crue, Easter Sunday, 1983.
Wow.
Number 2, Metallica, Megadeth, Metal Church, in Exodus, New Year's Eve, 1985, going into 1986, San Francisco Civic Center.
Wow.
Number three, Guns N' Roses with Iron Maiden, which was only 6 dates in the United States, at the Shoreline Amphitheater in 1988. And maybe Guns N' Roses, because in 1988, I saw Guns N' Roses 4 times, twice open up from Aerosmith, once on their own in early 88 before Appetite broke, and I had a seat in the balcony, and the place didn't even sell up. Number 5 would be Sabotage at the Stone in San Francisco in the Hall of the Mountain King Tour. And if anybody knows, it was before Chris died, obviously 6 years before he died. And on the tour bus, the front of the tour bus, in front of the Stone, it said White Witch, which is a song on Hall of the Mountain King, which is basically White Witch, is basically a lifestyle that we all lived back then, and unfortunately some of us kept on. And number 6 would be Pearl Jam, the week they appeared on Time Magazine, the Versus Tour at the Warfield Theater, and I saw them two nights later at the Greek Theater in Berkeley, but the Warfield Theater. I would say number 7 would be Judas Priest Scream for Vengeance Tour in 82, tied with Judas Priest Scream for Defenders of the Faith Tour in 84. And I'm gonna, this isn't metal, but I'm probably going to put this on the top of the list, so all the metalheads are going to hate me, but I don't really give a fuck. The Cure Disintegration Tour, September 10th, 1989, Shoreline Amphitheater, Mountain View, California. Brilliant, epic, dark, morose. I mean, awesome.
I like The Cure a lot, man. I mean, I really.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me, dude.
Yeah.
You know, when you're yeah, nah, dude, you're the real deal. I was working
at a record store when that record came out, and I was just.
That's when I married my wife, and unfortunately, she died. And I didn't tell you this, Mark, with our email. Yeah, she died June 18th, 2008. So I was with her on. Oh, yeah, it totally sucks, and it totally messed up my life big time. But I was with my girl, Lori, the choir, this September 10th, 1989. It was awesome. And the next one would be Paul Stanley's solo tour at the Omni Theater in Oakland, California. And I'm going to have to say...
I saw that. I saw the Paul Stanley solo tour.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. Way Trent, better than the Live to Win one. Oh, that was like, yeah. He was like, they shouldn't have been playing Magic Touch, you know.
Right. Right. Well, so you're talking the Stanley tour from like whatever that was, like 88 or something, 89?
Yeah, well, it was actually 89. Yeah. And then I'd have to say Nirvana, New Year's Eve, 93 into 94, 2 months before he blew his head off at the Oakland Coliseum. And, and then I have to throw in, just because of the love that you... would be Rage for Order tour with Queensryche opening up for AC/DC. So
cool. You mentioned Joey's podcast, The Rock Strikes 10 podcast. It's definitely a fun listen if you haven't heard
it. Oh, it was phenomenal. Yeah, it was great. It was just so cool to hear all this eclectic, other than metal sort of vibe that you were, you know, talking about. And I could tell that guy, whoever that dude is, He knew. And like, you know, I have a thing with the three sides of the coin guys and whatnot, and it's like I was talking to Tommy Summers, one of the things, and I was telling him about how I know you, and like, as far as I'm concerned, you, Mark Striegel, are the gold standard of podcasts. You know, not to kiss your ass, but you know, well, it's a fact.
What did they say to that? You told them that?
No, fuck yeah, I told them that. And I told Mitch LaFon, the he likes to say he's the rock journalist. But yeah, I sent him personal emails, Tommy Summers, Michael Brandfold, and Tommy Summers. But Michael Brandfold's a little bit pompous, and he thinks he's just so cool. But I don't know if you're aware that Eddie Trunk was just on their last number 50 podcast, and it was phenomenal. It was over 2 hour podcast, and it was really, really intriguing and just phenomenal internet radio sort of deal. But yeah, so
we had Eddie on our podcast many years ago.
I'm
not trying to one up them or anything, because listen, I think at this point the Three Sides of the Coin podcast or whatever it is YouTube show probably has as many listeners, if not more, than Talking Metal does. So,
let's be honest, Marky Mark, because you all you were before what they became. They just started December 11th of 2012. Talking Metal started before there was anything, so there was no coordination with YouTube, and, you know, if you started now and you did all that, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, well, I've thought about putting the podcast on YouTube, but it's like, I don't want to put I feel like it's better to have people hitting the MP3, and plus, if you put a podcast on YouTube and, like, there's, like, you know, six listens, it's, like, freaking embarrassing, you know, so it's...
Right. You're the one, the mastermind, but, yeah. But the fact of the matter is, if anybody has any sort of curiosity, whatever, go back to the Guns N' Roses stakeouts of the classic Talking Metal. God bless them, before, you know, your cohort became a rock star and the ultimate fanboy. You know, when it was just two guys, you know, like the Beavis and Butt at the originality of the podcast, you guys were just so, like, you know, just so green, and it's just phenomenal. And I want to say radio, but podcast. Right. And I know you know what I'm talking about. You remember
Guns N' Roses stakeouts put us on the map.
And I think that's before you met your beautiful wife, and before you had your family and your kids. Am I right?
No, because actually, I didn't start the podcast until after I got married, actually. I was married. It was long before I had kids, but...
Okay, right.
I started the podcast immediately after I got married, actually. I got married in the summer, June of 2005.
Five?
We started the podcast in August 2005, so...
Right. Yeah. Just, not to exclude... Lovable Victor, who I love, the Mars Attacks, by the way.
Oh, absolutely.
I got turned on to him because of you. But yeah, man, just good shit. And just, I have wonderful memories of those early, you know, before y'all went on to MTV. You know, let's not forget that you guys did the Headbangers Ball, right?
Yeah, we did a couple countdown shows on VH1.
Right. Exactly.
And then we did the Fuse show, and then we did some Headbanger stuff, yeah.
Yeah, but just, you know, I just don't want anybody to forget about that. I sure as hell don't. And, you know, when I flew down to the Golden Gods May 2nd, the day Jeff Hanneman died of Slayer, and I asked you, I remember corresponding you with emails if you were going to go anymore, and then a few years before that, I went to the Ace Frehley at the Viper Room, his first show of the Anomaly Tour. Remember, I was saying, "Are you going to go? Are you going to go?"
Yeah, were you at that, Victor?
Oh fuck! Were you at that, Victor?
There. Yes, I was.
Oh, you were? Cool.
The Viper Room Ace Frehley show, yeah.
That was epic. It was so cool. It was just phenomenal and just so cool. But I must admit, as a Kiss fan, 1973, 1983, with maybe a 1992 Revenge, kind of, but with exception of that, I just hate the infighting and just, you know, all the crap, and I'm just so curious what's going to happen with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I believe it's going to happen. I don't want to get my hopes up. But I want it to be perfect. I don't want a Van Halen syndrome. I don't want, you know what I'm saying? You know,
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, whether it's Van Halen or Guns N' Roses or even, you know, Blondie or David Bowie didn't fucking show up, you know, it's like there's been a lot of like controversy and Kiss wouldn't be the first band to walk in there with baggage and issues. However,
right.
The thing that I think is really different about the Kiss scenario, like with Van Halen, it was just really weird to have Sammy and Michael there and no one else, you know, and the other guys just simply didn't want to be there. Whereas I really think with Kiss, that all four of those original members, I would think want to be there. And I could see, and I don't think they can stop them from being there. I think Gene and Paul could say, hey, we're not going to play with those guys. But I don't know that Gene and Paul have the power to actually exclude them. I don't think they
right.
do, but I might be wrong.
Right, and the larger point is, F you, Gene and Paul. You know what, the Rock and Roll fan, the only time I'm ever going to stick up for them is they say, you know what, F you, Gene and Paul, we don't care what you think. Ace and Peter must be here or else you won't be here. Snap.
Right.
Like, you know, yeah. F you, you know.
And I don't know if you read Peter's book. It's a great read.
Oh, of course I did. It's phenomenal. It's a great book.
However, it is, you know, it is as great as it is, it's a very negative read. And I do think that in a lot of the recent interviews, and I do, whether Paul and Gene admit it or not, they read the book. And I feel like they didn't like the book and they didn't like how they were portrayed in the book. And I do feel that since that book has come out, they've been more negative not only towards Peter, but towards Ace. And I read this one interview with them on like a Fox News website, and they were like, they were lumping Ace in. They were actually saying, well, in Ace's book, Ace and Peter's book, everything, you know, they talk a bunch of shit about us. And Ace's book, he doesn't talk much shit about them at all. I think the only thing he says is that
company line, man. Now your buddy, your little, you know, your cohort, John Rockstar Astronomy, he's
right.
Totally, you know, trying to, he should know. I mean, Ace really, yeah, he totally was a company line, and now Ace, you know, had an epiphany. He's like, oh, F that. I'm going to fucking tell you all what it's about. So now he's threatening to write a second book, you know, and, and be more like a Peter Chris book. And it's like, well, he should have done it in the beginning, but in my opinion, maybe he was thinking dollar signs and don't want to, like, rattle the cage of Gene and Paul, you know, and whatever, you know.
Well, I'm very interested to read Paul's book, too, which will be coming out. I think that'll
Yeah, it should be, but, you know, and just how guarded he is and how sensitive he is, I'm not sure it's going to be honest, you know.
And, yeah, that's true. Paul is very guarded.
But Mark, before I go any further, I know I sent you a picture of me with your friend, Lon.
Right, yeah.
Lon Frame. I know that it's your friend. Do you remember the picture I sent you of me and him at the Metallica event in 2002? I saw him walk in. Like, I was the only guy that knew who the fuck he was, right? I'm all, la, hey, man. And I started talking to him. I'm all, hey, man, can I get a picture of you? And we took a picture and blah, blah, blah. I'm so curious to see what he would think about the whole thing. But,
I don't
know. Hey, man, before I go any further, it's fair warning, the greatest Van Halen album ever.
Oh, man, those both first six are so good. What do you think, Victor?
For me, it has to be either Fair Warning or Van Halen 2.
Okay. I'm with Victor there.
I like Fair Warning a lot. I like that.
Don't you think that Fair Warning is the closest Van Halen ever became to be quote-unquote metal?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you look at, like, Women and Children First with the song Out of Control is super heavy, and there's some just really
very true, very true, very true.
You know, the song On Fire on the first record is, I always thought, one of the heaviest Van Halen songs.
And especially if you put in the context of 1978, like I always say to people, all these revisionist, money-mortar quarterbacks, you know, they're like, well, that's not metal. It's like, well, first and foremost, Kiss isn't metal. Well, sorry, in 1976 in America, Kiss was heavy metal, okay? Yes. In 1978, 1981, Van Halen was heavy metal. Motley Crue, 1983, Shout Out the Devil, was American heavy metal. I mean, I hate this revisionist history. Well, it isn't Watson or, I always get mad at people. It's like, no, man, I mean, it may not be as metal as it was, but if something was something at one time, it still is now. So
no, I'm with you 100% on that.
I know you are. So, yeah.
Well, dude, we got to wrap up the show, but it's been great talking with you.
I'm hoping we can start opening
up the phone lines more and talking more to you listeners on the show. And that was
cool,
Donnie
bro.
G checking in. So sorry to hear that tragic news that happened to you. I had no idea, and I'm glad.
Yeah, well, I never told you in the emails and stuff. That's why, you know, you asked me why I disappeared, and may I say, you know what? I guess that's kind of why. I kind of disappeared. Not that I didn't talk to you after 2008, but I sort of went into funk and got back into bad habits, and, you know, you get depressed when the person that your loved one, you know, the person your soulmate dies, you know, you sort of give up, and now I'm back. So,
but all right, good.
Victor, I want to say, Victor, awesome. I love the fact that you're involved with Talking Metal, and I hope we can move forward and just expand everybody the greatness that is Talking Metal. I mean, it's the original. It's the real deal. You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah, totally. Well, thank you so much, Donnie, and we will definitely be in touch. I'll hit you up with an email, and check this out when it goes up as a podcast, because that's where most people are.
All right, brother. Good to hear from you, bro. And Mark, I love you. And Victor, keep it rolling, brother.
Thanks, Donnie.
All right, buddy. Later.
Later. So, Victor, I got to wrap it up here. It's about been going about a little over an hour here. So why don't we end with some Jakey Lee stuff? What do you think?
Yeah, this is actually, you luckily found this. I looked all over the place and couldn't find the exact
track.
We never actually spoke
about Jakey Lee. We were going to actually talk about him, weren't we? We never actually spoke about
him. Yeah, but
real quickly, he's got a new record coming out, right?
Yes, the Red Dragon Cartel. It's going to be out in January on Frontiers.
Yeah, no one's heard from this guy for a while. I know we keep mentioning Metal Sucks. They just posted an article. It said, Jakey Lee does something, which I thought was a funny headline. You know, and I've spoken with people. Certain people want to argue that with me. They're like, well, he played on an Enough's Enough solo or something. It's like, no, the guy's been really missing in action. You know, just because he played on a couple tribute records and did a solo here and there doesn't mean he's been in the spotlight. Everybody, you know, there's been a lot of rumors as to why he hasn't been in the spotlight. Who knows what the story is, but I'm glad to hear that he's coming back with some great special guests on this record, right? Paul Di'Anno.
Paul Di'Anno, Maria from... Yeah.
Who else? Robin from Cheap Trick, right?
Yeah, there you go. The track that they released has Robin on it, I guess, doing backing vocals.
So Jakey Lee, one of my favorite guitar players from the 80s and even into the early 90s, I guess. I can't exactly remember when that second Badlands record came out. But, you know, played on two of my favorite Ozzy records. And Badlands, that first Badlands record, I just love. It's such a great record, perfect record. Ray Gillen on vocals, Eric Singer from Kiss and Alice Cooper fame on drums. Such a hard rocking record that, in a lot of ways, I feel laid the groundwork and kind of was almost a transition album from 80s metal into 90s grunge. That's the way I always looked at that first Badland record. It kind of like, it still had a foot in the 80s metal thing, but it was kind of like getting us ready for, like, you know, Soundgarden and a lot of other stuff that was on the way. Alice in Chains, which came out, that first Alice in Chains album hit right around that same time. And listen, I know Soundgarden was already putting stuff out, but I'm talking about, you know, Bad Motorfinger and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I would have to agree. It's funny because I'm a real big fan of the second album, and there's a song on the second album called Shine On, which I always thought fit that exact mold that you described, sort of that in between Alice in Chains to Soundgarden sort of feel. It's just a real murky sounding song, and I always thought that it sort of fit that. So it's interesting that you think that about the first
album.
Totally.
And before we play this song, just real quick, on Facebook, our good friend Dave Burke checking in, and he's saying he loves the solo at the end of the Bark at the Moon. So Dave, I'm with you. I love his playing on that record. Center to Eternity is a great song on that record. Bark the Moon is another record which almost every song is perfect. I think every song is perfect, actually. I even like So Tired. I know I'm weird, but I even like that song. Anyways, we gotta run, guys. Let's end with some Jake on guitar here with In This Moment, right?
Yep, In This Moment, you're going to listen, and it's Jake doing the solo.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Go to TalkingMetal.com, MarsAttacksRadio.com, and show us some support by listening to the shows and making a PayPal donation.
Thanks, guys.
All right, cool. Good show, Victor.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. Had Donnie G doing the ace part there. Donnie G's back, and I told you so. The track Center of Eternity actually has two different names. I have the European version of Bark at the Moon, which has different graphics.